Yeah, dude, let me see that Walkman again.
Yeah. I got a few of them, man. They it's old school. We're dead at the gym right now. See how that
was. That's crazy, dude. I bet you, dude, there's probably a hipster out there.
Somebody's going to buy it for sure.
Spend good money on this. No, I don't know. It just kind of seemed to come out of nowhere. Like the old school electronics.
Yeah.
Like, I followed somebody, you know, horror related on Instagram. Can't think off the top of my head what her name is. But she would post pictures of, like, the movies that she was either watching or having. She's got, like, old movie posters and decorations and stuff. She's just a horror fan. And she started posting videos, or not videos, but pictures of her VHS tapes. And I thought, that's cool. You know, like the old VHS that you'd see at, like, the video store.
I collect VHS,
basket case and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, because there is a lot of VHS that's not available.
Right, you can't get it anymore.
You can't get it on DVD or whatever, right? So I'm thinking, okay, that's kind of cool. But then I started noticing that our comments were full of people being like, I've been looking for this one and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going like, okay, it's not that, it's like Jaws on VHS. It's not that uncommon, you know, but come to find out there's like a culture of that.
Oh, yeah. I'm very much involved.
Of VHS collectors. And, you know, it's super cool. I mean, I bought a VHS, like we had a dual VHS DVD player that I had for like 12 years and it finally crapped out, so I bought a new it was kind of hard to find, but it's a dual deck VHS.
Yeah.
Because we got a whole lot of old VHS movies and home movies and stuff from back in the day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, it's worth it to keep the format. That was a little hard to find.
Well, I get the DVD burners, VHS to DVD burners all the time. I get them all the time, man. And a lot of times they just need to be cleaned, and they work fine. Get them for $10 a piece. But I found Serpent in the Rainbow on VHS the other day, which you cannot find Serpent in the Rainbow on DVD. It's not on Amazon. It's not on Netflix. So wow. The only way you're going to find it right now is VHS, pretty much. And I finally got a copy of that, so that's exciting.
Well, speaking of old school music, welcome to episode number 12. I am one of your long-standing hosts of 12 good episodes, Scary Dad himself, Billy Stewart. We're sitting across the table here at Scott's Funland, Funhouse Funland.
And it is full of toys right now.
And it is stacked to the ceiling with toys. As you can tell, it's almost Christmas time. Well, actually, it's past Christmas time.
Yes.
We're just recording this before Christmas because we both have to go on vacation.
Yeah, we'll both be out of town for Christmas.
By the time this drops on the 2nd, it'll actually be Happy New Year. So let's change that little pre-roll. I'm not going to edit it out. You can just laugh.
Leave it organic.
This is us hungover from our New Year's party. Happy New Year, Scott.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you too, man. It was a crazy night last night.
All right. Actually, as you're listening to this, we're probably both on vacation because it's, you know, middle of December, and that's how it stacks up. So the episode today, we're going to talk about some of our favorite heavy metal bands that we've seen live, that we wanted to see live and never made it to, maybe that we didn't see live and just always enjoyed a cassette or a CD or a live video of. So before we do that, we're going to take care of our history segments. I'm going to let Scott read off this one. It is a little interesting and a little bit more up his alley.
Let's see what we got. Okay. Today in 1981, one of the largest investigations by the British police force ends when Peter Sutcliffe, otherwise known as the Yorkshire Ripper, is arrested in Sheffield, England.
Serial killer got caught today in 1981.
Today in births, we have the one and only Isaac Asimov, one of my favorite authors growing up as a child. He actually had some of his sci-fi that creeped me out and scared the hell out of me.
Sci-fi would.
There was one called The Jaunt, which was about time travel, space travel, similar to The Fly, teleportation. And the thing about The Jaunt is, because of the technique used, you had to be asleep, totally out. Otherwise, you would go nuts. And the way the story went, this one kid, he didn't take the pill he was supposed to take to go to sleep, because he wanted to experience it and see what happened. And when he came out on the other end, he was just this monstrosity that came out that his parents didn't recognize. And that one creeped me out. At 12 years old, that was a freaky story.
then your parents take you down to the train station.
and that's interesting. You know, sci-fi kind of, a lot of sci-fi blends in with horror. You know, what was sci-fi that you kind of got into back in the day?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. Whenever I was, when I was a kid, I guess when I was in high school, we actually had a sci-fi section. And it was like, we had to read certain things like Harrison Bergeron, which I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
Yes, sure am.
For the listeners, Harrison Bergeron is a story. It's a dystopian future where instead of equal opportunity guaranteed, you have equal outcomes guaranteed. And what happens is whenever you're smarter than the average or physically more able than the average, they hobble you. So everybody's wearing these things on their heads to rattle their brains. But the smarter among you know that the people who have the most weights and the most chains and the most pads around their brain are the most talented.
Yeah.
And Harrison is one of them. And it's a short story. It's been made into a couple of movies. But it looked into a dystopian future where people were unconcerned with reality and the ends was all that mattered. Flash forward 25 years and science fiction is becoming science fact. It's a little scarier than maybe a Friday the 13th movie because it's really happening. And that's about as close to politics as we're going to get here. But no, that's one that actually it through the years just kind of kept me kind of scared. Of society, you know, just how crazy people can go. So now we're into probably what could either be one of the longest, maybe a two-parter episodes that we'll ever do, or have done, anyway, because one of the things that we like to talk about whenever we're off the mic is music.
Yes.
So, I need to get a sip of water, so Scott, take it away. What's your favorite band?
Depending on the genre, let's go with best concert I've ever seen. I would have to say the best concert I've ever seen as far as sound quality, effects, and just total experience was Ministry back in the day.
Okay.
The UNO Lakefront Arena in New Orleans. That was just an amazing experience. It sounded like the recording from the CD that I had. It was just a really amazing concert. That one really impressed me. And next to that was probably the first White Zombie concert I went to, which is also in New Orleans. That was a good one. But there's so many bands that, and so many genres that I listen to. My mom, I grew up with a mom who spent the 50s and 60s going to live music concerts all the time. And she used to tell me stories about, you know, James Brown coming to town and the Ike and Tina Turner Review and seeing all these bands live in these small hole-in-the-wall clubs and stuff. And she really had an appreciation for live music. And she would take, I was going to Zydeco clubs when I was 10, 11 years old till 2 o'clock in the morning sitting there, just listening to them jam out and everything.
Nice.
And I bounced at a concert hall when I was in college for a while. So I got to see all kind of bands in that venue. And just, I have a tremendous appreciation for live music. My favorite, absolutely top all-around artist has always been Prince and always will be.
Wow.
But just the different genres, I probably listen to more, I was real big hip-hop as far as the top level for a while, but ever since probably the 11th, 12th grade, metal has kind of taken a little step. I listen to a lot of metal, and on that genre, Pantera by far will be the best band that I've ever listened to when it comes to metal. I know a lot of folks disagree with that. They got some Pantera hate, but I love some Pantera, man.
Pantera generates some hate because of infighting within the band.
Yeah, and Sam always did.
And outside politics and personality stuff, but they're kind of hard to argue with the power and the groove of the music. They might not be your favorite band, but you cannot like them for reasons, but it's really tough to not like them whenever they're standing on the stage jamming.
Reached a level, and the thing about Pantera is, you know, Metallica, when they got to a certain level of fame and record sales, they kind of mellowed out a little bit.
Right.
Pantera ramped it up.
Right.
The higher they got and the more popular they got, the heavier and harder they got, which was really impressive because they didn't lose any fan base. You know, they just kept going up, and unfortunately, the band broke up because of Anselmo's antics. But
yeah,
but, you know, they were just they would have been big, in my opinion. They were bigger than Metallica, just because Metallica kind of went down a little bit once they got that
Metallica. Metallica was like, well, you know, on the metal side, and we could talk about Metallica for hours, but. Metallica, what Metallica did was they crossed over into the mainstream. So Metallica never got less listeners. They got less rabid.
Yep.
Guys like me dropped out of Metallica.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you're saying going back to your roots. Like, so my dad was a radio DJ in the 70s.
Nice.
And, you know, college radio DJ. So he met a lot of players. He went to high school with Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just knew a bunch of people. Not that people that I ever met, but just people that he knew or had known or had seen play or whatever.
Right.
And so he was like an encyclopedia of music knowledge, especially from like the mid to late 60s into the early 70s. You know, he knew all everybody in a band, what they played, you know, what other bands they had been in and different things like that. So I always kind of had a affinity for music. Now, whenever I was little, he had kind of moved into more of a country phase, you know, and luckily it was more of like the roots country, like the, you know, the Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson, the kind of stuff that you'll hear on the classic country radio station
yeah.
now, which when I was a kid, I didn't really care for, but now when I'm grown up, I can kind of, I catch the appeal, you know. It's mm-hmm. kind of it sounds good, and it's not annoying, which
yeah.
there's so much stuff out there that's just it's like they make a song that is pretty good, but then they're like going in like, what if we were to take a keyboard and make it sound like a cat's nail scratched down it, you know, throughout the song, and you're like, why did you do that? You could have untracked that. But you know, we talked in the last episode how he and I kind of we didn't literally come to blows, but we came to figurative blows over a little band called Def Leppard, because in the mid 80s, whenever that whole devil worship and music and metal and, you know, Skeletor being, you know, demon spawn
yeah.
going through the religious right, he didn't get caught too far up in it, but he got caught enough up into it that he was trying to monitor what I was listening to.
Right.
You know,
just to be on the safe side.
Making sure I wasn't going to shoot myself because Judas Priest told me to or something.
Right.
And, but, you know, so there's that phase of, like, you know, Bon Jovi and Aerosmith and Def Leppard. And then that was intertwined, you know, he showed me stuff like Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles and the Stones. And, you know, so I always had that kind of growing up.
Yeah.
What really kind of kicked it into gear for me, probably my favorite all-time band of all time ever would be Guns N' Roses,
okay.
GNR. For me, that was a major game changer. That a lot of people talk about kind of their punk revival, like, oh, that's what told me what music could be.
Now, if I'm not mistaken with GNR, just real quick, they originally went on tour with opening for Bon Jovi, right? Like in 89 or 88, something like that?
They did a lot of touring.
But I remember from what I heard from that tour, they kind of stole the show from Bon Jovi, because
mm-hmm.
that was the first time a lot of people got introduced to GNR, and that's when they just shot straight
yeah.
to the top. It was
I actually read Slash's autobiography not too long ago, and Guns N' Roses, the early years, is very much like trying to kickstart a motorcycle
mm-hmm.
that you know doesn't have it. Well, you know, it's got problems. It won't turn over, but once it turns, it's going to run. They couldn't get it together. They couldn't get the recordings right. They couldn't get the songs right. They went through producers. They went through members. They went through all kinds of crap trying to pull it together. But those five guys that were on Appetite for Destruction were kind of the core of it all.
Yeah.
And so they went on a lot of mini tours. Like, he tells one how they, you know, because they're out of L.A., they drove up to, like, Seattle, and their bus broke down, or their van broke down, and they were, like, stuck on the side of the road in the rain and the
mm-hmm.
cold, you know, somewhere between Seattle and the next nearest town, you know. So they had some crap that they dealt with, you know, coming together. It's
right.
kind of amazing that they actually did, with as dysfunctional as they all are. You know, in the music, like, they recorded several versions of Appetite for Destruction that with like the LA producers wanted to make it real slick, like Poison.
Yeah.
And finally, somebody was like, just put a microphone in the room and let them go. And they got that raw, down and dirty sound.
Right.
They took all the effects off of Slash's guitar. They let the drums sound, you know, just hit real hard and loud. They weren't trying to slick it up and, make it electronic. But that, to me, was just like an awakening. And interestingly enough, you know, like, I'm just kind of all over the place. My two favorite bands would be Guns N' Roses and The Cure.
It's like me. You can appreciate different genres of music.
We're talking about Pantera. When Pantera, The Great Southern Trendkill, came out,
yes,
there was the same day The Cure's Wild Mood Swings came out. Bought both of them.
See, I'm a tremendous Cure fan. I mean, I love The Cure. The place I used to bounce at was actually an alternative club. Back when alternative music was still alternative music, mm-hmm. It wasn't anywhere near mainstream. The record companies didn't have, you know, any say in pushing which alternative band should be at the top, you know.
Right.
They came out, you know, Jane's Addiction was just blowing it away, and then, you know, you had The Cure, you had so many bands out there that just, and this is another thing, I was telling my son the other day, he asked me, have you ever bought an album where you liked every song on the album? And I said, you know, they don't make those like that anymore. And I said, the reason why is, they want you to have to buy the next one. Mm-hmm. They don't want to put all the good stuff out on one album, you know, but yes, they're, Jane's Addiction, album, I could listen to every single song on that album. It's a good song.
There are, yeah. And it's weird, like, because even my dad, you know, being a DJ, he used to tell me stuff like, you know, because he was a programmer as well. So the reps would bring in the music and, you know, the records and be like, okay, so this band is, you know, whatever band it is. He says that basically, because he's got like 200 records that he's got to listen to in 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got like 10 seconds per song to catch him, or he doesn't have time.
Right.
And he said that on the one hand, it was extremely efficient. On the other hand, he let go a lot of stuff like Pink Floyd and stuff because they had such long intros,
yep,
that he couldn't get it in. But he's like, you know, 3 minutes is kind of the magic set song. If you don't have a verse, chorus, verse, hook, you know, he said it didn't make it bad. It made it difficult to get through,
yeah,
and listen to it. But he's like, but that was my, when growing up, that was all my album collection. It was all these samples that people had brought in. I had promotional copies of like,
Test Pressies are awesome, man.
Of like Sgt. Pepper's and the White Album, you know, like all these. And unfortunately, my sister had a lot of them at her house when Hurricane, I guess it was Ike, came through, mm-hmm, and flooded her living room. So I think she still got the vinyls, but the jackets got all destroyed.
Yeah, you can buy new jackets for them, though. They're still pretty cool, man.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, like the whole concept of album rock and deep tracks and B-sides was foreign to me, because to me, if a record didn't have, like, a record was allowed to have like one or two shitty songs and still be considered good, you can start getting to three or four shitty songs, this band sucks, and I'm not buying their next one.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, right. Yeah, I'm not going to waste my money on like, this album if it's
you'd
two
have,
or three good songs.
You'd have concept records like The Cure, like with Disintegration.
Cool, yes.
It's like the whole album is a song.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all separate songs, but they all flow together.
And it's like Tool. Tool had that thing. That's uh-huh. why they don't allow their music on iTunes, because they want people to buy the entire experience of the album.
Right.
Because each individual track, they go together. They don't want people just buying some tracks off of the album. They want you to have the experience.
Saw Tool earlier this year, actually.
Okay, with when they opened with Primus?
Uh-huh.
Cool. I got tickets for Suicidal Megadeth instead, and then I found out about the Tool Primus, and it was...
See, this year was actually a really good year for live music, but that was not a good day for live music. Tool, unfortunately, I've seen Tool a lot.
I've seen them a few times.
They showed up, they played their songs, they had the lights off, and they didn't play any songs that anybody would know, which is a bitch when you pay $100 for a ticket.
Well, yeah, you're
they played like one, maybe two songs off of Anima. They didn't play anything off of Undertow. They played one song off of Opiate, and all the rest was off of either Lateralis or 10,000 Days. And even those songs were the deep, buried tracks.
Right.
Like this had to be, you had to have your nose right up Tool's ass in order to like this band. And Primus did the same damn thing.
Really?
Yeah. They had like a 45-minute set. They played one like 13-minute song. Just...
I love the bass lines of Primus.
I was like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I mean, at least they played Mr. Krinkle.
Well, Suicidal and Megadeth was a kick-ass concert.
I would love to see that.
Actually, so the first time I saw Suicidal was at a... I happened to be in New Orleans. I was working on a cruise ship at the time. And we were docked overnight in New Orleans, decided to go out in the warehouse district, go over to the Howling Wolf, and Suicidal Tendencies is playing live in concert in this little hole-in-the-wall venue, which is my favorite type of place to go see concerts. And Psycho Mike was in full effect, and it was a...
Mike Mirra is crazy.
Oh, dude, he's... even today, you know, when I saw him this year, he's a showman, dude. He loves to perform. He's passionate about his music, Infectious Grooves, which is a band that came from Psycho Mike and Red Hot Chili Peppers and a few other people. But Infectious Grooves is one of my favorite bands also. You know, they threw out a couple of albums there. The bass lines were just so... It was just such a funky rock music that it's... you can't help but it's infectious. You know, yeah. You gotta love the grooves they have.
Man, I saw Suicidal with Metallica.
Nice.
In, like, 94. This was right before Metallica went, shaved their head and went soft.
Yeah, they were still jamming.
And it was, unfortunately, it was supposed to be Alice in Chains, but Staley either overdosed or got sick or something, and they had to cancel that part of the tour. But it was Metallica, Alice in Chains, Fight, which was Rob Halford from Judas Priest, yes. Suicidal Tendencies, and somebody else. I think maybe it was like Candlebox or something. And then Alice in Chains dropped out, but it was like a big festival out at the Sam Houston Race Park. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. Like, but I don't think I've ever seen a more violent pit than for Suicidal. I
mean, the Suicidal fans are some dedicated fans. Yeah, if you've been listening to Suicidal since the early days, man, from Go Skate Go, it's the music, when you hear it, you just get pumped up. I mean, I can't help but institutionalize. Every time I hear the damn song, man, I get chills. I'm just ready to go ahead and swing on somebody.
That's badass.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Megadeth. So when I was prepping for the show, it's like, okay, what's your first concert? What's your first, you know, like, you've been to places with your folks. Maybe you were at the festival and there was some D-list band that was playing there, you know, and or, you know, like the free festival at the whatever, and so whatever band was, but your first, like, actual arena show or, you know, what. My first one was with my dad, and it was at the Summit, which became the Compact Center, which is now Lakewood Church.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, and it was the Beach Boys. And I was prepping for the show, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, the Beach Boys aren't that scary. But, you know, they were involved with Charles Manson, so they're pretty scary. like there is that connection to that dark 60s. But my first real... I mean, that was a real concert, obviously. That was them playing. That was, like, in the early 90s, when most of them were still alive. I think the only one that wasn't with them was Brian Jones.
Okay.
Well, not Brian Jones. Brian Jones died.
Bare Naked Ladies made a song about him. Damn, I can't remember his name. But there's a song about him by Bare Naked Ladies, because he was going through some mental issues that he was dealing with a psychiatrist. And a song about it.
I'll remember it in a minute. But, it was... Brian Jones was a Rolling Stone guitarist that died.
Yes.
Dennis Wilson was the drummer that died.
Brian Wilson.
Brian Wilson. Okay.
That's the song.
How much of a Beach Boys historian I am.
I just know it because of the Bare Naked Ladies song.
but Brian Wilson was the member that wasn't with them. All the rest were still alive and playing. It was a good show, but I was like 11 or, you know, 10 or 11 or something like that.
Okay.
Maybe a little older. But my first, like, get out and see a show, me and my friend... You know, he comes and picks me up, and we go. I was in high school. It was Aerosmith with Megadeth opening. And Aerosmith put on a good show.
But Megadeth
killed it. And it was crazy, because that's kind of a bill you don't think of. Like, Megadeth is heavy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they kind of mellowed a little bit.
As they got older. But they still, man. They had some tunes, man.
Rust in Peace was brand new. I mean, it was maybe a year or two old. It was only like 92. Rust in Peace is one of their heavier albums.
Oh, yeah, by and, far, man.
So I'm just sitting on that hill just getting blown away, just like...
At the age of 16, I actually went to, at the sports page in Lafayette, Louisiana, a very small venue back home, GWAR, when I was 16 nice. Years old, and that was by that was an eye-opening experience, to oh, say yeah. the least. They, Induced rock, man. That's just an intense experience. You go the next morning, you wake up and you got a loose tooth and you got a black eye from the pit.
It's oh, yeah.
It was a wild time.
Me and my friends used to chase pits. Honestly, it's kind of funny because, you know, the nostalgia that's part of it. Going to live music is what took up my money to the point where I could no longer collect comics anymore. It's like the comic companies were putting out, everything was like all die cut and multi variants, and you had to buy 10 of one yeah. copy to have anything, and it got to the point where I needed money to go see shows.
I'm glad they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, right. But I needed money to go see shows because me and my buddies, dude, like, we'd go, no lie, if there was a national act, and this was back before the internet. So you had to go to damn Foley's.
I remember standing in line at this clothing store. Yeah, back home, you had to go hometown.
To Foley's to buy tickets. And it's like in the old lady section, or it's like in the lingerie section. And the old lady that ran the thing would look at you and be like, what are you doing in the lingerie section, punk kid? You're like, I need you to sell me a ticket to whatever, you know? And there'd be lines. But yeah, dude, so, like, we'd go to national acts, then, like, once it was over, because there was, Houston had a curfew, like, I guess when I was in high school, maybe a senior in high school, and still have it.
Right.
But they had a curfew where kids had to be at home by midnight, so shows had to end by 11. But club shows, like, could do whatever they wanted to do. They could play till 2. So we'd get out of someplace like, you know, Metallica. Well, Metallica, we'd go home and sleep. But, you know, we'd get out of, like, an arena show and then go drive over and see who was playing.
Right.
So, like, on one night when we, like, who did we go see? We saw went and saw The Offspring. And when we were done seeing The Offspring, we drove across town and Hole and Veruca Salt were playing.
Nice.
And so we popped in there, saw the tail end of Veruca Salt, saw Hole, like, killer, you know. But yeah, I mean, it was live music all
oh, dude.
The time.
And you know, before Vegas became my favorite place for live concerts, it was New Orleans. And one of the reasons why, the after parties. Because uh-huh. Back then I kind of knew I knew certain people that I could get in after parties a lot. And the craziest one, saw Nine Inch Nails and the Jim Rose Circus. I don't know if you folks out there remember the Jim Rose Circus, but it was an alternative freak show. They used to travel with Nine Inch Nails and do this just... It was like a circus freak show. Mm-hmm. Just these crazy guys.
A skinny dude that used to put on a tennis racket, like put it around.
Yes,
like,
yeah. That's better.
Get him through. And
Jim
like,
Rose is still out there, man. He's still, shout out to Jim Rose. He's one of my Twitter followers, bro.
Nice.
He's still out there touring and everything with a circus and stuff. But I ended up going to the after party at the penthouse that Trent Reznor had off of Bourbon Street in New Orleans. And that dude is crazy.
Yeah.
That is an interesting character, to say the least. He that was a pretty wild after party for that one. But a great concert. Nine Inch Nails has always blown it away. They just their style of music is just is it ranges so vast across just the speeds and the mood that the music sets you in. It's from angry to just happy to want to dance to back to angry.
Nine Inch Nails is one of those that. I don't think ever since he started scoring movies, I'm not exactly sure how crazy his concerts are, but man, so I saw him on the Downward Spiral tour on Halloween, 1994.
That was when he was with the Jim Rose Circus.
With the Jim Rose Circus. How cool is this? We missed Jim Rose because me and my buddy went to see Pulp Fiction in the theater because we heard it was so badass. And it ran longer than we thought it would, and we had to drive across town and try to park or whatever. So we get to the Summit. I'm just going to call it the Summit. It was Compaq Center or something back then. We get to the Summit, and we've got seats. And we are not seats guys. We are pit guys, right? So it's Halloween night. Marilyn Manson's, you know, doing their thing. Or has just finished up their thing or whatever. And we're like, fuck, what are we going to do? You know, it's like, we got to be on the floor for this. Like, and some girl, like, taps me on the shoulder. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, are you going to jump the barriers when the, And I was like, huh? And I look at her, and, like, behind her is, like, this whole, like, crowd of people. And they all kind of put up their hands like, me too. I'm like, okay, we got a team. So they bring the lights down. Trent Reznor comes out. It's like, boom, everything blows up. 1,000 people just rush. Barricades go down. We run our asses off. My buddy that was with me, because two of us, he fell and got caught under the gate. So he went down, and people are, like, running over him. And so he got back. He wasn't hurt, but he fell down, and he got delayed a little bit. So he got up, catches up with me. We got all the way down there. Song's, like, you know, 10 seconds into the set. Holy shit, we made it. Oh, shit. I'm thirsty. And we can't leave.
You're not going anywhere.
We're in here. But it turned out to be like one of the best shows ever. Like, it's so cool.
My favorite pit incident, pit mishap, I guess you could say, was back in the days when Lollapalooza was actually good. We're in a pit with, they're in Beastie Boys. And we're in the pit, and this girl that we were with, that came out with us, she gets kicked perfectly in the head by a guy that's surfing the crowd to where she's out.
Ooh.
So, you know, Beastie Boys said it's almost over, so we drag her out and we lean her against a porta potty. I'll never forget this. And I think it was Jane's Addiction was coming on next. And we heard the lead in for Been Caught Stealing. And we left her there and went back into the pit. But it was back then, Lollapalooza, it was safe. She was fine.
Yeah,
she eventually woke up and came found us. She wasn't upset or anything. But those used to be some wild concerts. Those old Lollapalooza days were some good shows, man.
So I was at the Lollapalooza with Smashing Pumpkins and Beastie Boys.
Okay.
And somebody had the bright idea that Smashing Pumpkins should go on after the Beastie Boys.
how can you even compare those two?
So, I don't remember exactly how or why, because I remember at the beginning of the set, I was like right up on the stage, but just people bouncing. There was a certain point, and it was during Sabotage, actually. They brought up the lights, and it was getting dark. It wasn't quite dark yet, but they, like, boom, they brought up the lights, and just, I was probably like maybe 20 people back, you know, like 20 rows back. You look around, and it is just, you ever see like those fish that you're feeding at the zoo? Everybody's just like, ah, thrashing. And it's as far as the eye can see, in all directions. Like, there's, if you fall down, you're just gone.
Yeah.
Like, you'll just wake up tomorrow in the mud. They finish their set, they go off stage, Smashing Pumpkins comes out and starts playing.
I can imagine,
and it's,
man,
just like a snore fest, and everybody's just like, we out.
It's bringing you down and everything.
Like, out. And the funny thing was, dude, so they had walked off stage at a show like earlier that year. Like, somebody had thrown a shoe at them, and they whined and bitched and, you know, and shout out to Smashing Pumpkins. So this Lollapalooza, they come out, they're like, we promise you can throw whatever you want at us and we're not gonna leave. They got thrown shit at.
Like, thanks for the invite.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
People were just scattering on the floor looking for shit to throw. It's great.
So, you know, that's about the time that mainstream rock music started going downhill when you think about it.
Everything started crashing probably around 95, 96.
Record companies kind of took over, started telling you what they wanted you to listen to. And, you know, there's still some great independent groups out there. Acadia Bar and Grill on 1960, up going towards Spring. That's one of the good little off the beaten path rock, live rock music venues that I've been to. Some friends of mine from California, 20 Pound Sledge. Shout out to 20 Pound Sledge. If you guys get a chance, check them out. They're out of California, and they actually flew in to play Acadia Bar and Grill one night. And I got a chance to go see some amazing local acts, man. I want to try to make a trip back out there real soon.
Go check it out. Yeah, the kidlets keep me kind of away from stuff unless it's like, you know, national act that it's like a scheduled thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, this year I managed to see, I saw Tool, I saw The Cure, and I saw GNR.
Jackal's coming up.
Jackal's coming up. When is that coming up?
Next weekend. Not this weekend, but the next.
Yeah, I'm out of pocket for that.
I might have to check that one out. The last time I saw them, they got arrested in my hometown for he was warned not to pull his balls out, and he pulled his balls out anyway, and that didn't go off too well for him.
So you mentioned Pantera. Let's start, let's lay down the list. So I saw White Zombie.
Excellent cop. Seen them. Seen them twice.
I saw, White Zombie, basically club shows. I mean, they were small arena shows, but it was essentially club shows. Yeah. One of my all-time favorite bands. Funny story, when I first saw the video for Thunderkiss, I almost thought it had to be a joke.
Well, I first saw it on Beavis and Butthead.
Because it was so over-the-top awesome that I thought, there's no way anybody's doing this seriously. You know what I mean? Like
the hook in that song. I know exactly.
It's too perfect.
The voice.
Something's gonna break.
Yeah.
You know, like this is completely put on. Like it's produced like a movie. It can't be just some band making shit.
What's amazing the first time I saw that video, like I said, it was on Beavis and Butthead. I never had an idea that Rob Zombie would become such an influence in my life.
Exactly.
Just across the board, music, movies, just. I love the guy.
Yeah.
You know?
His art, you know?
Yeah, everything.
I remember there was some episode, this was back when MTV used to play videos.
We were talking about yesterday.
There was an episode of something. It wasn't Headbanger's Ball, but it was one of those, it was one of those, like clip shows, or, you know, it's like where they just played videos, but they'd have, bands in and chat with them and stuff. Yeah. And the girl was talking to Rob, and he's answering the questions, but they're in, this house, and it's like graffiti everywhere and stuff, and he's got his marker and he's just casually talking to her, and while he's talking to her, he's drawing like big old thought bubble, and he's got monsters all around the thought bubble, and he's like kill, and it's like so that she becomes part of the art, and it's like she's screaming kill, and he's got like all this.
That is awesome.
I was like, and he's talking to her, like talking to her while he's doing it, like over her shoulder. I was like, dude is awesome.
He has become such an influence in just my life and so many other people's, just through movies and everything else. I never would, the day I saw him on that short clip on Beavis and Butthead, yeah. I enthralled by the song, loved it, immediately went out and looked for the tape, and I never would have known that he'd still be.
So, like I said, I'd seen him in a couple of club shows before they got big.
Right.
When they went big, they played a couple times, and then I don't want to say they went on hiatus, but White Zombie broke up. Rob Zombie came on his own. He was doing different things. I didn't catch him for a long time. A couple, 3 or 4 years ago, they toured with Marilyn Manson.
Yep.
And Marilyn Manson just didn't bring it. He was sick that day or something, but it was just really boring. Like, he played, the songs were correct, but there's no energy.
I like a couple of his songs on that.
Then Zombie came out and completely redeemed it. It was like a man completely in his element. Just completely the ringmaster.
Right.
The showman. The monster. And he's all textured and dirty, and he's got his hair and his hat and his eyes and the whole makeup and the whole effect. And he looks 10 foot taller than he actually is, you know. And they have these giant Rock'em Sock'em robots on the stage and everything. And, you know, it was kind of one of those things of, like, I realized, and I liked Marilyn Manson when they came out. I really enjoyed their first record. I saw them at a couple club shows as well. The difference with the staying power between Zombie and Manson, to me, is, and this is going to mince words a little bit, so you have to follow me here. Manson was trying to be really scary. In real life, scary. Mm-hmm. He would say things that he thought were legitimately frightening. Zombie made monster movies. Corporate nihilism falls off whenever you hit about 25, 30 years old. You're like, suicide and all that crazy shit, I gotta go get a job.
Yeah.
But monster movies stay cool forever. Like, there's, you know what I mean?
Right, so, I know what you mean. I'll just say, my feelings on Manson, and this is, especially compared to Zombie, is Manson was a gimmick. Was a guy that came up with a shtick that decided to go ahead and put it out there and see how far he could take it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's not really him. Rob Zombie's really like that.
Yeah.
He's really into that shit in real life. I mean, that's his passion.
Well, he's a collector. He's an artist. He's Yeah, he's really he's into that stuff.
The other guy was just a gimmick that he used to go ahead and get out there and make music.
I don't know. He's good at it. But.
He's good at it. There's a few songs, but I'm not a real big Manson fan. I would skip his part of the concert if I had to.
if it comes back around, I'm not too keen on Manson anymore. You just get too old to be screaming all that. I mean, whatever. I don't want to dog on any Manson fans. If you like them,
that's cool.
If you've got
that's
Manson cool. tattoos and that's your bag, you know, I'm sure I like a whole lot of shit that you don't like, and we can still be friends.
Oh yeah.
But I was talking more about the disappointment in the actual show. Like, it didn't bring you over. Like, Ozzy can still bring you over even after the Osbournes. Ozzy gets on stage and he becomes that maniac from the 80s.
If you look at the difference, just everything he's seeing, just everything is just the way he was when he was young.
Yeah.
It's as though he gets possessed by, you know, his inner
spirit of rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know?
And he gets on stage and he gets on that mic and he just blows it away every time.
You know, and there was a point at which, and I remember when this record was available at the grocery store, that Blizzard of Oz, where he had his mouth open with the jelly in there, because he was making fun of the bat biting head thing. But to me, I was like 8 years old, and I'm like, that is scary as hell. What scary looking dude with like shit coming out of his mouth, like, what's going on? So he nailed it.
Yes, he did. But even if when he gets on stage, his eyes even get wider. I mean, he's just like, it's a different person when he gets on stage in front of that microphone.
Oh yeah,
it's awesome, man.
Yeah, my buddy just saw, and he posted on Facebook, I wanted to go, I just couldn't swing it, but the final Black Sabbath tour just came through here, and those record companies now are actually paying the bands, like they did Motley Crue and Black Sabbath. They're actually paying the money not to come back out so that they can sell it as the last tour. Like, the Rolling Stones have been broken up for, like, not broken up, but they've done their farewell tours like
The
last 30 years.
And there, I mean, from what I understand, the last one they did in California, the big concert in the desert they were doing,
mm-hmm.
I heard it went really disappointing as far as ticket sales and everything else.
Oh, really?
So I think that they might be coming down to that end. But the thing about it is, these concerts try to charge so much damn money for tickets, you know?
Yeah.
And the generation that, you know, we don't have money to go ahead and pay that much money to go see the damn Rolling Stones. Def Leppard. I've seen Def Leppard 9 times. I'm not
going
to pay a whole lot of money to go see him again. You know, the last time was really expensive, so it's not high on my to-do list to go see.
See, and that was the thing too. It's like you've got your so like, Guns N' Roses was an expensive ticket, but that was also they're so messed up.
You get to see them.
They haven't played together since 91
right.
or 92. You know, so it's been 23 years since they played. Chances are, and a reason, I think the way they held Guns N' Roses together on this tour was they, either Axl or Slash, one or the other, but probably more likely Axl, ran out of money, needs money badly, and they said, okay, here's a big old pile of money waiting for you at the end of this tour.
You don't get it till we're through.
You do not get, you get a per diem, and you get to play nice. And here's a doctor to get you on the right mixture of medications to make sure that you're even tempered. And you do not cancel a show. You do not leave the stage before. Like, you work for me. And then you can have all this money, and then you can go do whatever you want.
Right.
You can buy an island or whatever, but you're going to finish this tour. Because they lost so much money on, like, promoters and stuff. Lost so much money on him throwing fits.
Oh, yeah.
Over the years.
They couldn't afford to take that risk again,
know?
Man.
And so they just had to have that. But I bet you you're sitting on probably $500 million at the end of that tour.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, hey, what? Well, more power to them, but I don't expect them to come back around again.
Right. Now, I got to say, the last show I saw with Def Leppard was the best show I've ever seen with Def Leppard.
Really?
Because the previous 8 times, it was the same concert each time. You know, they went through the greatest hits. They usually had a new album they had put out, you know, a year or two. They'll play a couple songs from that. Then nobody, that's when everybody goes and gets beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come back. Well, when I saw them in Vegas, they were doing the Viva Las Vegas tour. They were in-house band at Hard Rock Hotel for 3 weeks, I think it was. And I didn't think there was an opening act. And I'm standing there waiting for everybody to come out. We had actually went backstage, sang a song with them, took pictures with them and all kind of stuff. And we, next thing I know, they announced the opening act was coming out, a band called Dead Flatbird. And it was Def Leppard. They came out in costume and played all their B-sides.
Oh, nice.
So there was actually music I had never heard live by Def Leppard before being played, and it was a great concert, man.
Wow.
I mean, full of energy. It was a really awesome concert. I was very impressed. Had a blast.
Yeah, I've seen so many bands. One of the best shows I've ever seen was Faith No More last year.
They used to rock it, man.
Dude, Faith No More, I never got a chance to see them before they broke up. Faith No More was always one of those bands that they were always in support of somebody bigger, but
yeah,
they never really came around on their own.
Well, that's one of the bands that, you know, the concert hall I used to bounce in, whenever these national acts would first kick up, like Third Eye Blind.
Mm-hmm.
I bounced a concert with Third Eye Blind in a little, you know, 3,000 square foot building. Their first tour, and that was just insane, man.
Yeah.
And Faith No More was one of those bands also.
And, but yeah, dude, we saw Faith No More. They came out. They had been retired for like 18 years. They'd been broken up. Then they come out. They play. They're like full lights on. No shadows. No light effects. It's just like everything that they're doing is like straight up naked. Like they're wearing like linen costume, like linen outfits. They have stage flyers on stage. Stage lights are up the whole time. House lights are down. Stage lights are up. If they're going to mess up, you're going to see them do
right.
It. Mike Patton sitting there singing and hitting every note. You're watching his Adam's apple.
It just, wow.
You know? And everything's just spot on. They had energy. They had charisma. They were friendly to the crowd. You know, it's like, which, you know, they're always friendly to the crowd. But my buddy saw him in Dallas the night before. And he was just like, dude, Houston nailed it. Like, Dallas was cool. We thought we got a good show, but Houston was just, like, spectacular. And then, you know, saw The Cure. I skipped on that.
I've seen them twice. It was a great show.
I've seen them several times. This last one was probably one of the best ones I've ever seen.
Then was it a San Antonio show? Didn't they play San Antonio recently? A friend of mine, I think, drove down, like, 2 years ago for that one.
They played in Houston in May.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I knew that. I couldn't make it to that one, but...
And again, you know, stood there... The whole Toyota Center is completely sold out, and they just walk out. They play for like 3 straight hours.
Well, the thing about
every,
it is
every B side, every song that you wanted to hear because you're a casual listener,
mm-hmm.
they played them all. Every song that you wanted to hear because you're like me and have every record and all of their B side
right.
tracks, they're playing shit you'd never expect them to play, and they're playing it just like nothing, just like oh.
Well, this was cool about The Cure is that's one of those bands that has such an extensive library because
right.
they were at a time when an entire album was good.
Well, and then like in the early 80s, they were releasing like an album every six
oh,
months.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking the other day. I couldn't believe it. I think going through them all, I have 16 Cure CDs.
Mm-hmm. That's about what I've got.
You know, it's insane how much they would put out. And it's all good. It's
yeah.
all good, man.
It's, you know, and you look at the dates on some of those. It's
yeah.
like 81. 82, 82, 83, 84, 84, 84. And you're just like, whoa. And they were touring the whole time, too, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
that's how bands used to do it, though, man. I mean, Morrissey. Morrissey and the Smiths.
Mm-hmm.
That's another group that has a tremendous catalog of music.
They were together for such a short time.
We used to call their songs their greatest hits album, A Thousand One Ways to Commit Suicide, because my 10-year-old daughter, I make her listen to The Smiths all the time. And she trips out over the titles. The Girlfriend in a Coma, DJ. She just thinks that it's the funniest stuff she's ever heard. Man.
Have you seen, there's lots of mashups on YouTube, but somebody mashed up all of those like infomercials where people can't do shit, like sit in a chair or you know, whatever. And they montaged all of that and they overlaid it over please, please, please let me get what I want. I'm gonna put this video, let me write this down.
Yeah, I've got to put that one on the side.
It's hilarious, dude. Yeah, we're gonna post some videos in the show notes for this.
Yeah,
we're pushing on a little less than an hour here. I think we're just getting started, honestly.
I can talk about music for hours.
We can talk about music for hours. Excuse me. Unfortunately, with our new setup with Spreaker, we get an hour long until I can get everything set up without having to break it into two parts. So I don't have quite enough. We don't have quite enough to make it two parts. So what we're going to do is move into the news and go ahead and close this down so it lasts an hour. So we didn't do the news at the top of the show, but the news is this. By the time you're listening to this, we should be on iTunes.
Yep.
We'll be on Stitcher Radio. So if you use either an iPhone, an iOS, or an Android, you can download the application and then get our cast automatically.
You can subscribe. You can share.
You can subscribe and share and have it automatically loaded to your phone so you don't have to seek us out. That said, we also have the forum, which is the Scary Dad's Haunted Forum, linked to on Facebook. So if you like what you're, you know, if you completely disagree with me, if you are a Manson fan, go to facebook.com/ Scary Dad's Haunted Forum and join the group and join the discussion. Tell us what we're doing right. Tell us what we're doing wrong.
If you want to chime in on some of the podcast subjects, tell us your favorite band, some concert experiences, share with us, you know, send it out there.
And we're doing a little promotion right now, trying to kick up some buzz, because we're talking a lot, we're gathering listeners every day, but what we would like to do, this being the first of the year, you got so many of these websites asks you to like or share or comment or do whatever it is that they want you to do. And we want you to do all of those things too, but rather than just beg you, we're going to actually pay you for it. Okay, so what we're doing right now is, in order to grow the forum and to get some new blood, every 100 members that join the forum, the Scary Dad Facebook group, the Scary Dad's Haunted Forum, that's going to trigger a giveaway. And I'm sitting in Scott's Funland right now, and we've got enough to do a giveaway for probably 40,000 fans. If we do one giveaway for
give or take 10 to 20,
but for the time being, you know, hey, reward yourself. What you do is, if you've got a friend that likes heavy metal magazines, horror, toys, comics, movies, freaking ghost stories, antiques, scary things, whatever it is, I don't know, history,
yes,
mysteries, cryptozoology, the Yeti, you know, Loch Ness Monster.
The subjects are wide and varied.
You know, anything that, dude, look at some of the old stuff on the Scary Dad, you know, we've got links to, like, Instructables, where I've got tutorials where I show you how to build your Halloween decorations. We've got so much varied interest here. If you got a friend that likes any of that stuff, invite them to the group. And then once we hit 100, we're going to give something away. You know, so
among those subjects that Billy threw out there might be a little hint as to some of the things we'll be giving away.
Yeah, that could just be about anything at all. I could get you some dirt from the crossroads where Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil. I could get you a first edition Stephen King novel.
We could dig up a 1-2-3 of Heavy Metal Magazine Volume 1.
There's so many things. So what is that? Conan the Adventurer Demon Hunter Battle Stallion
comes with limited edition action figure, you know.
So that's not, you know, he might sell that before we get to 100, but
I got five more.
But you know, we got some stuff that we're going to give away. So help us out. You know, if you love us, spread the news. If you hate us, share the post and say these guys suck. You know,
somebody might end up liking us that ends up seeing that post.
So that's the way you can help, you know, spread the word. We're not asking for money. We're not asking for donations. We're just asking for a couple clicks, and we're going to give you the opportunity.
And just building this Scary Dad Nation.
That's it. So that's it for me today. We're going to go ahead and let you get back to whatever non-Scary Dad stuff that you do. And
we're going to keep talking music for a little bit here, probably.
Keep it scary.
Take care, fellas.